Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the April 29th edition of Rubber Guard Radio. I am your host, KZ. Tonight's show is brought to you by our sponsors, FogCityWrestling.com. Fog City's next show is in July. It's on July 5th. It's from Kezar Auditorium in San Francisco. FogCityWrestling.com and our other sponsor would be WrestleWarehouse.com. If you need Lucha Libre masks, independent DVDs, T-shirts, WWE swag, Wrestle Warehouse is the place for you. They carry a bunch of different stuff, and tell Jeff, the owner, that KZ from Rubber Guard Radio sent you. Okay, and from the 818... Who am I speaking with?
Hello.
This must be White Trash Johnny Webb. How you doing, brother?
How you doing?
I'm fine and dandy up here in Northern California. It's actually a nice
Was
day.
I punctual enough?
Just on time, sir.
Okay, there you go.
Cool. Well, we're gonna start from the top, man. How did you become interested in this wacky business?
Oh, man, you got to ask me questions like that? Shit.
Well, sure.
I don't know. I guess it was 95 or whatever. You know, when the big Monday Night Wars were going on, I guess, is when more people seemed to be advertising the fact that you could actually go somewhere and learn how to wrestle. So
are you originally from Southern California or...
Yes. Yes, I started out with slammers,
mm-hmm.
where you got the Messiah from, and if you remember early days of XPW, Carlito Montana. I also, one of the guys who trained me was Dynamite D, who's passed away a year ago, and... also, one of the senior guys there was beautiful Bruce Bodine, but you probably better know him as Ed Ferrara. So,
well, you mentioned him. Do you have any beautiful Bruce Bodine stories?
He liked to wear pink a lot, and he had bleached blonde hair back in the day.
He had that
not at all like
afro.
What's that?
He had that big curly white man afro going on, and
yeah, it was kind of like a blonde. He kind of looked like a blonde Garvin, is what he looked like.
You know what? That's a pretty good comparison.
Yeah,
actually, now that I think back, and when he would bleed, it would look really really cool because his hair was so bleached blonde and it was so poofy in the front. It just looked crazy. So Dynamite D broke you in, and did you work for the Slammers company? Did they run shows under their own banner, or
yes, they did. It was a school that that ran shows, and part of your training was you would do these shows for free, which you know, nowadays, well, even back then on the indie scene, it's what's the difference, right? You know, I mean, it was. So, you know, you weren't getting rich anywhere else otherwise. So it seemed like a big deal at the time, but in retrospect, it was pretty nice. I got good memories at least.
So who was your first match with? Was it with D?
No, my first match was with Tyrone Tiny Little, who later in XPW was known as Sybil.
Mm. Wow. Jeez, that's back in the day. I hear Slammers or Slammer University. I think of the little ads that they had on the back of the PWIs back in the day. You know, they were one.
Yeah,
of
I mean that's how I found them. You know.
There you go. So. Did you continue to train and then work outside bookings, or did you, quote unquote, graduate and fly away from the nest? Or
no, I believe technically I was kicked out, as most of us were, because the basically everything that you had to adhere to was pretty strict, and we for whatever reason. We used to do shows every Thursday in Bakersfield, and I was living down here in Orange County at the time, actually. So that was no fun making that trip up there on a Thursday every night, because according to Vern Langdon, the man who ran Slammers in Bakersfield, that was the traditional night to run shows. Now, I mean, that's probably by 1950s standards or whatever, and but to him it was all the same. So, which was kind of funny, because most people, if you asked them on the street if they even knew that, or if they even knew where the venue was, most people would just shake their head. So,
so after you broke away from Slammers, what were the other companies that you were finding work with?
Well, first what I did is I decided to continue my training with, it was called IWF at the time, Impact Wrestling. And so then I continued my training with Cincinnati Red. Also at the time there was Christopher Daniels, Navajo Warrior, Gary Key, who was known as Tool, and... my what would become my tag team partner, Dirty Dan Hansen, when we were a tag team known as Trailer Trash. So we did shows up there in Simi Valley. Mm-hmm. And just basically trained with them for like another year and did shows, and then also doing shows for just random people, feds that, lasted two shows or whatever here and there. A million of those. UIWA worked for them as well.
Well, that was Alex, what was his last name? Damn it.
Alex Knight?
Thank you, Alex Knight. Well, that was his company, right?
No, he was running down here, too. I worked once or twice for him also. But, no, that was, I believe Doc Marley was there, and I'm not sure who was really running that promotion. I guess it was Cincinnati Red that was actually running that promotion, so, with Gary Key.
So when you were doing the shots for IWF, were you ever in the ring with Daniels as an opponent?
No.
No?
No. He we had done shows together. He even did an XPW show. But no, we never had any matches together, no.
Mm. Well, what are your opinions of Chris Daniels' work?
Oh, he's great. I mean, back then there was, everyone's faced with the decision, am I gonna do this as a weekend warrior, or am I gonna, just eat dog food or whatever I have to do to really focus on being a professional wrestler, So I guess a lot of us, you know, what we were seeing on television at the time, because it wasn't things weren't changing over yet. Mm-hmm. So in terms of, you know, like what the hybrid guys are now, you know. Now there's more hope for the smaller guys, you know, to make it, you know. But back then, those guys, you know, guys like Daniels, you know, the Hardys, you know, all these people like that who just said fuck it and just, you know, pressed on and convinced themselves, you know, if I just keep at it, hopefully I'll break in somehow. You know, and I admire those guys for pushing it like that, you know.
Well, they did happen to come at the right time, too. So, I mean, this business is just not about who you know, or it's just not about talent. Sometimes it's just luck.
Yes.
You know, really. I mean, sometimes things just fall right into your lap, and, you know, there's nothing you can do about it, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent.
Exactly.
So who actually owned and ran the IWF?
I believe that was Gary Key and Cincinnati Red.
Okay.
And then after a while, then some of the guys from Slammers had decided to splinter off from and form their own Fed, which Dynamite D and Kevin Kleinrock started up, which was SCCW, SoCal. And that's when we started doing more of our own shows with our guys, you know. That's where Damien Steele came from. I mean, you know, Damien Steele, he also came from Slammers as well. And so a lot of us there, we, and Homeless Jimmy, I'm forgetting a bunch of people right now. But, yeah, we splintered off, started doing our own shows. You know, we'd be trying to get the word out there, and stumbled onto Rob Black from one of our many flyering sessions. I guess we flyered some house show at the Pond or something like that, and I guess Rob had gone to some show and saw our flyers and got in touch with Kevin, and then that's pretty much how XPW was born. So when people tell you that that flyering is a waste of time, I beg to differ, because sometimes something else can come of it. So,
I have to agree. To be honest, I don't think there's enough flyering going on. But that's just me. You cannot just advertise on the internet. You need to, you know, there's got to be some type of local type of promoting going on. So, XPW. Or at least the idea of XPW was put together. Were you one of the first guys brought in?
Yes.
Okay. So
basically, the whole Rob Black story is he was, from the East Coast, so he was a big ECW fan, got very friendly with them, you know, as you can imagine, you know. Hey, there's this porn guy who's a big mark and likes hanging out and likes bringing broads to the shows and whatnot. And so he basically wanted to propose a partnership with Paul Heyman, wanted to be his representation for a West Coast branch, if you will. And wanted to help him to expand. But like most promoters, you know, I think all promoters have that control freak gene in them. And, you know, basically was his attitude was, no thanks, I'll do it myself. So I guess Rob just got it in his mind to go ahead and start his own promotion. So, you know, he purposely looked for people that were ECW types to make his XPW brand out here on the West Coast. So that's in a nutshell basically how I ended up with a cane, because he basically wanted me to be his Sandman type, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Before we get going on the XPW stuff, I'm gonna drop a name, and I would like your honest opinions about him. Wildman Jack Armstrong.
Who?
Did you say who?
Yeah.
You don't know of Wildman Jack Armstrong?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Could you describe him?
Looks kind of like Michael Hayes.
What would his era be?
Well, he was an indie guy in the mid-80s out there. He was based out of there, out of L.A., and he would do TV stuff for New York, and he worked for the old California Championship Wrestling, where he feuded with Junior Mayavia.
Yeah, I'm not familiar, sorry.
No, okay. Okay, I was going through the online World of Wrestling profiles, and I saw Jack Armstrong. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. He may know of him. Okay, so you started the XPW product, and Mr. Black obviously wanted to go with more of an extreme type of product. Now I'm gonna be straight with you. Do you prefer working a more scientific type of style or the hardcore stuff?
Either one, you know. I mean, I'm not a high flyer. I'm actually more of a mat wrestler, I think. But you know, you get niched into something, and then that's what people want or whatever. You know, that's why I indulge myself even now to this day with little shows on the side here. You know, because you know I went out there and pretty much, you know, learned whatever I could. You know, I pursued like all styles, you know, so I could learn as much as I could about everything, you know. So I did some lucha and, you know, pretty much everything else, and try to do a little of everything, but obviously an XPW is more of just a hardcore type of style, I guess.
Okay. Now, was XPW... it was able to run on its own, as far as Mr. Black was concerned, or did he have investors, do you know? And I'm asking, did he have to answer to anybody, like Heyman had to answer to people, and that, you know, where there weren't anybody else that he had to please?
No, I mean, it was all, I mean, that's why it dried up like it did, because he was financing it all through the adult company, and there were a couple times where he kind of reached out to different investors, you know, so that it wouldn't, the one thing wouldn't tax the other as much. But then, you know, he kind of became the same type of animal, you know, as Heyman. You know, he didn't, you know, he would have loved financial backing, but he didn't want to relinquish any control either, you know.
Right. That makes sense. I mean... If it is your company, you know, it is your toy, so you're going to play with it. And,
right.
And you don't want anybody else telling you how to play with your toy.
Exactly. And if a person's going to give you money, more than likely, that's what they're going to want. They're going to want to open their mouth. They're going to want to interject their opinion. So.
Yeah. So, okay. How long from when... you guys all agreed to start the company to the first show? In other words, how long did it take to get the venue and get everything set in place?
That's a good question. I think once they finally like sat down and said, okay, we're going to do this. Let's go look for guys, you know, let's scoop up talent out there. And he tried to do it very professional-like, and a lot of the indie guys here, didn't want to have anything to do with that kind of stuff, you know, because he was asking everyone to to stop working the, you know, all the other little guys, and he wanted them to really treat it like it was a, you know, like the fourth or the fifth or whatever number promotion, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, that it was now going to be the big number four or five or whatever, and wanted people to be exclusive, and you know, some people were like, okay, great, and some people were like, forget it, you know.
I mean, it makes sense if you're running, you know. I mean, heck, even every weekend you can ask someone to not do that. But if you're only running one weekend a month, it's kind of difficult.
Right.
You know, ROH now barely gets away with it with running two weekends and having their guys not work for other companies. And it's, I don't understand how these guys that work for TNA now, you know, they go, they work two TVs a month and then a pay-per-view once a month, and then they can't do anything else on anybody else's TV or DVD releases.
Right.
I don't understand. It's not fair to the other guys. I mean, you got to eat.
Well, I mean, I'm sure this isn't a shock to you, but, you know, most promoters don't give a fuck, you know.
Oh, wow.
It's like either you're in or you're out, and we don't care about your problems, you know. So if a guy, you know, asks you, you know, to do it a certain way or to adopt this policy, you know, and you're not interested, then that's the end of that, you know. So.
Okay. Let's see. All right. So now, when you first debuted for XPW, the guys that were being, you know, behind the scenes, the guys who were booking things, did they consider you a main eventer right away?
I don't know.
Considering they started from scratch, where everybody it was a clean slate for everybody.
Right.
So I'm kind of asking, where on the card were you slotted when you first came in?
I guess I was pretty much in the basement. You know, I had my first match was with Phenomenal Phil, and I guess it was like maybe the second or third match, you know, on the card, and I lost that match and on my birthday, and yeah, that's another little interesting fact is that XPW and I have the same birthday, so July 31st.
That's tremendous. That's tremendous. Wow. Okay. So
also the same birthday as the recently crowned SoCal Rookie of the Year, Big Nasty Eric Watts.
That's a big kid, isn't he?
Yes, that's a little shout out to my little chocolate brother.
And you know, the thing that's scary about Eric is that he's not done growing.
No.
You know, he's still a baby, and he's not done growing. He's a rather large gentleman, and the sky's the limit for him. But we'll talk about current stuff a little later. okay, so now this wasn't the first time you worked with Phil. You've worked with Phil before, correct?
Yeah, mostly. I guess that's where we met up was in IWF. Yeah, mm-hmm. So. So that's we started doing shows there. Usually, me and my tag partner would go against him and a guy named Johnny Hemp, who's kind of just, you know, pot smoker gimmick type thing, you know. So it was Johnny Hemp and Phenomenal Phil. They were known as Phenomenal Buzz, and they. You know, we had wars with them, Trailer Trash versus Phenomenal Buzz.
That's pretty cool. I dig that. Phenomenal Buzz. That's a pretty cool name. Well, we're gonna go through some results here. I'm looking at September 24th, 99 in the Toilet Bowl of California. I mean, Reseda, I'm sorry. And you are in a match with Big Dick and Damian Steele.
Yes.
You broke in with Damian.
Right.
But do you have any Big Dick stories?
I don't know, man. I mean, you know, the man has passed away. You know, maybe I should just keep those to myself. I don't know.
Okay.
They're a bit wild. So.
I tried to set you up there, but you didn't bite. So. But I tried to set you up, and on
he was a great guy. You know, real easy to get along with. You know, and really loved Rob's idea of, you know, trying to start up a new flavor, you know, a new flavor of extreme out here on the West Coast. So he was, you know, he was kind of like the general at the time, you know.
Well, on the line, I have my tag team partner and San Diego independent worker, Alex.
Oh, no.
What's going on, Alex?
Hey, what's going on?
Oh, this guy.
Hi to Mr. Webb.
Yeah, my voice is still messed up from Saturday, but I got a couple of questions real quick.
Yeah, I just washed all the dirt and tortillas out of my hair, so.
Yeah, I actually I poked out my head at a Sunday show and saw that. That was wild. It's like the fans were like laughing during mine and Eric's match, but they were like very violent and angry during y'all's match. I don't know what it was.
Probably being pelted with tortillas, they probably weren't too crazy about that. So,
well, it was an honor of mine to be able to say I worked the show with Johnny Webb. So I appreciate it. And
what a suck ass. I mean, oh, thank you.
But that Chimera kid, it was not an honor to work a show with him, I have to say that.
Hey, what's wrong with Chimera? He's a
who?
Good guy. Who? Exactly.
Who's that?
So, from what I understand, in the early days, I mean, from what I saw, in the early days of XCW, you were managed by Missy Hyatt. How many shows did that go on, and what are your thoughts on Missy Hyatt?
Well, Mom and I mean, Missy and I were, you know, I don't know whose idea was that. I guess they just, you know, wanted to find, you know, whatever names they could that were from the old ECW and bring them in. And I guess they thought that was a good idea to, you know, put us together. And, you know, I guess it was fun for what it was, but I don't know. Just not. I can't really say I have bad or fond memories or anything.
Mm-hmm. And then was it? Do you know whose decision it was to bring Missy out here to manage you? Was it something that you wanted to do, or?
No. It was definitely like a Rob idea, a Rob Black idea. So, you know, I figured, what the hell, you know.
Can't hurt, huh?
Somebody to light my cigarettes and give my beer, and you know.
And when I was in San Francisco and I spoke to Dave Marquez, and he was telling me some of the stories that happened to him when he was in XPW. How exactly did Dave Marquez come into XPW, and what are your thoughts of Dave Marquez?
Well, one day, I don't know what year it was, but Dave Marquez got off the boat from Missouri and popped into our offices and just had a whole new vision for us and ways of generating advertising dollars and this and that. And of course, that meant we were going to have to clean up our act and whatnot. And then pretty much that was that, because he was trying to sell this concept of cleaning up XPW, cleaning up the whole extreme thing, and just being a very old school WCW type of promotion, you know, and Rob wasn't going to have anything to do with that, you know. But you know, from the production side, you know, he was very helpful. So Rob, you know, kept him for those sort of things and, you know, and helped out for a while. But, you know, it wasn't going to last because they were just two different guys, you know, that just eventually weren't going to work out together.
Interesting, interesting. So were you still with XPW when they ended up making the expansion out east?
What's that?
Were you still with XPW when they ended up expanding out east?
Yeah. I was still with them for the first couple of Philly shows.
What were your thoughts on the expansion? And what were your thoughts on the expansion?
Well, you know, I mean, it seemed promising at the time in terms of promotion. But, you know, you have to remember, I was also an employee of Rob Black at the time in his adult company. Basically, that's, all the XPW product you saw out there, you know, I edited all that stuff. I basically became an editor for him. You know, it was because of him that I learned editing, video editing and whatnot. So, you know, I was making two incomes from that. Since I knew what was going on in both worlds, you know, in the wrestling side of his business and the adult side of his business, I knew that that if something, you know, really big was going to come along soon in terms of some sort of financial help, that that he would end up losing one or the other, you know. So
mm-hmm. What were your thoughts on all the promotions in the East Coast kind of rallying against XPW coming in? Because I know Ring of Honor and CCW, they started co-promoting shows and stuff like that. So what are your thoughts and opinions on that?
I just you know, I mean, they saw what we were putting together, the type of product that we were putting together in terms of, you know, we had the ability to get our DVDs and stuff out there, and we were better suited for getting our name out there. You know, we were able to spend money on TV advertising and whatnot. So, you know, they obviously saw us as a threat. And you know, especially where New Alhambra is concerned, you know, they probably just didn't want another Fed, you know, running in that building. Because, I mean, it seemed to me like that was the big problem, was that they didn't want us in that building specifically, you know.
How happy was the XPW office to finally be able to run in the ECW arena? Because, like you had covered earlier, that Rob Black was a huge ECW mark. So what were the thoughts and feelings finally running that first show at the New Alhambra?
Well, you know, I'm sure, you know, all those guys were happy about it, you know, especially Rob, because the longer XPW was around, the more heated the whole war between him and Heyman became. So I'm sure it felt like a huge you know, conquest, you know, like some sort of military campaign where it's like, okay, now we finally, you know, stuck our flag in on their turf, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, after years of being a fan of the product and then to finally be able to kind of show there and then have a lot of their talents, it's very interesting. But what were your opinions on that? When ECW folded, and a lot of the talent came over and started working for XPW. What were your thoughts on that? Because, I mean, they were oftentimes pushed to the main event levels as to where, you know, the guys who kind of got it started obviously had to move over to make room for the new ECW guys coming over. So what was the locker room's thought on that?
Well, you know, I'm sure everyone's was different. You know, everything that I got out of XPW was just kind of like a see, I'm a weird cat like that, because, like, a lot of that stuff when I was being pushed, it was just like, you know, I wasn't really looking for it, you know. I wasn't trying to get those spots, you know. I would have loved for those guys, for those name guys to come in and, you know, jump ahead of the line, you know, jump in front of me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I ended up working with a lot of them. So I guess it was mostly just trust issues. You know, he knew, Rob knew that the, you know, the guys who'd been with him the longest, the guys who never really questioned the whole concept of being exclusive. And I guess, you know, it was just kind of like a reward thing, really, you know. So he just knew that he just felt safer pushing the guys that were here, that were local, that he knew that were basically stick with him, you know, because we had seen him, we saw him as a guy who, you know, who came into this with money and was definitely showing that he was committing to spending it, you know, to make it into something. So
whose idea was the Elvis gimmick?
That was mine.
And so, because it was a very unique transition into your character, and then maybe it was because I didn't watch the TVs at the time, but it didn't really, I couldn't really follow it, but you were, you know, the white trash Johnny Webb character, which at that time was very smart and Sandman, and then upon Messiah's leaving, then you transitioned, when you joined Rob Black, you transitioned into the Elvis character. So how exactly did that come about?
Well, you know, I mean, to get all cerebral with it. I basically looked at it as, you know, psychology-wise, white trash wins the lottery, and money and fame will always make you more of what you already are. So if you're, if you're a broke douchebag, you know, when you get money, you just become a rich douchebag, and you have more resources to do whatever it is that you need to do. So I just looked at it as, you know, here's a guy who has it all now, and is just kind of like following the same path as Elvis, and you know, he's just more concerned with his outfit or you know, karate or whatever else, you know.
Okay, KZ, I'm going to let you take over. I actually have to run. So thank you very much, Mr. Johnny Webb, and then I look forward to seeing you in the future.
Good talking to you again, and good seeing you the other day, too.
Oh, thank you very much.
Take care.
It's great when Alex Saint, you know, reaches in and I give him the hot tag. I love it. He's the man, but he happens to be at work, so he's juggling.
I happen to be at work, too.
Oh, well, there you go. There you go. And you are working for Big Vision?
Yes.
Cool. Cool. That's got to be a fun job.
Well, you know, I mean, I've known, you know, I'm working here with Kevin Kleinrock, of course. And so, you know, we've known each other for like 12, 13 years now. So, you know, it's not always a great idea to work or to go into business with your friends and whatnot. But, you know, for the two of us, you know, he, you know, I understand all his little quirks and whatnot, and he puts up with the fact that I'm a giant asshole. So, you know, so we get along pretty good.
Cool. Okay.
And I get to, you know, I get to do what I love, you know. So instead of, you know, doing the whole, you know, spending half the day editing porn and the other half of the day, you know, working on the XPW show. Now it's just pretty much, you know, spending all day on wrestling or MMA or poker or whatever, you know, all the other things we put out here at Big Vision Entertainment. BVDVD.com.
Got the life. I should play that Korn song just for you, man.
No, thank you.
You don't like Korn?
No, Jonathan Davis, he was on our one of our shows. He was a guest announcer. He's not really a people person.
Mm. Well, I think he's got some issues, but, you know, who the hell doesn't? Well, now, XPW, you know, was known as more of a hardcore promotion. They did wrestle. but they were mainly known for the hardcore stuff. I remember hearing that you were in a few of the death matches. What do you think of that style? And would you, looking back, would you have been able to do it on a regular basis? In other words, being in the actual death match division as opposed to the world title picture?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it didn't matter to me one way or the other, you know. I kind of look at all those matches the same. You know, it's a fight is a fight, you know, and you don't know what level it's ever going to escalate to, you know. So I could be working a lucha match where, you know, I'm just going to get a whole lot of hip tosses or whatever, or I could be, you know, getting thrown out of the ring onto a guardrail. You know, I just kind of look at it all the same way.
Okay. Now, the first King of the Deathmatch tournament that was held by XPW. What are your memories of that show? Considering it was, you know, it was, you knew you were going to get 7 death matches.
Right.
What did you think of the show overall? As a worker, how did you think the show came off?
You know, at the time, I had no clue. But you know, seeing it afterwards, you know, I thought it was, you know, we were giving the people here something that that hadn't been done yet, you know, in terms of, you know, just having shows completely dedicated to, like, a deathmatch tournament, you know, out here on the West Coast, so... you know, it was interesting. That first one though, that the night of though, I couldn't tell you much about what happened because I was completely shit faced. So,
well,
and needed to be so.
You.
So,
well, yeah, exactly. I don't blame you if you're going to go into something like that, especially, you know, I'm not saying that Messiah, you know, will go out and hurt you. But that's one guy that I just would not want to be in a death match with. Just, I wouldn't. He's a little too convincing for me. Well, I brought up Billy. What are your thoughts on the Messiah?
You know, just like I've known him from Slammers, obviously, and at the time there was kind of a. There was almost kind of like a cliques, you know. There were guys that were being trained just by Dynamite D and guys that were being mostly trained by Carlito Montana. So, you know, it was there just always seemed to be some sort of a little, like, wall there. I don't know. But, I mean, we got along great, you know. I mean, we just never became, like, you know, close, you know. We were never, like, real buddy-buddy or whatever, so...
Yeah, I don't know. Messiah's got all the talent in the world, but he just can't. I don't even think it's him, or he just can't get to that next step. You know, he's right there, right at the top step, but he just can't seem to get over it. I don't know why he can do the deathmatch stuff. He can do a stronger style. I've seen him do comedy. I mean, he can do pretty much anything, but he just couldn't get over that hump.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could describe like 70% of us that were there in XPW the exact same way, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, him and I both, you know, it's like could have had more if we would have been willing to, you know, pursue it stronger, I guess, you know? There wasn't... At the time, there wasn't really this, in our minds, like this need to go out there and, you know, work on the East Coast, you know, try to get out from under the whole XPW exclusive thing and, you know, branch out, you know. And that's pretty much what we needed to do, you know. and if we really wanted to move on from there. You know, and then, you know, maybe in hopes of making a bigger name for ourselves you know, hoping we could come back or, you know, it was the awkward scenario that we were all in, you know, which kind of hindered our ability to go out and to just progress, you know, just to work different people and get our name out there better, you know.
Well, it wouldn't be an interview discussing the Messiah if we didn't discuss the America's Most Wanted deal. What was your opinion on the attack and then the piece after that America's Most Wanted aired?
I've still haven't ever seen that whole America's Most Wanted thing. So I've heard about it, but I've never really seen it. So
what do you think happened?
Well, I was told what happened, you know.
Are you at liberty to share or
No. I mean, he told us all what had occurred, but like, you know, you're really asking like who do I think did it, right?
No. I that's, you know, but you know what? It's good that that there's always going to be these conspiracy theories. It's like JFK, you know, who put the hit out on Messiah. It's, you know, it's part of urban legend and lore now. So, you know, that's really not so important. I was just wondering your feelings on you know, what was going on. And but okay, we'll skip that one. I'm looking through results and I'm seeing a couple names that are standing out to me since I'm up here in Northern California. Michael Modest and Donovan Morgan.
Yes.
What are your feelings on, first off, their work in the ring and then them backstage?
I mean, both of them were great, you know, great workers. So, you know, there was the first bit of effort made on our part to be more than just garbage wrestling. Obviously, when we started bringing in guys like Modest and Morgan and Christopher Daniels, and you know, we were definitely trying to send that message, you know, that we weren't just a bunch of guys, you know, rolling around in thumbtacks. Not all of us.
You know, Rob dropped the ball with Modest. See, I first saw Modest in 97, and Mike was doing the wrestling is hardcore gimmick, where he was the anti-anything hardcore. And he was so good at it, and I think it would have worked in XPW. But I don't...
Well, I think the problem was... It's funny that you bring it up, but I think the problem was there was that that wasn't really that much of a stretch, if you know what I mean. Because, you know, you asked me about, like, you know, people backstage and whatnot, and that's just kind of the vibe that I got, and I think a few other people got, too, you know, where I don't think he felt comfortable around a lot of us, you know? Because obviously there weren't a bunch of angels back there, not the gay angel. I mean, like, you know, the spiritual angel from the Bible type, not the gay homo. But so you know, I think he didn't care for you know, for seeing guys, you know, like Supreme with a, you know, with his big old bottle of Jack, you know, and you know, some douchebag like me smoking, and you know, I'm pretty sure he wasn't comfortable around that, you know, and he didn't really try to hide that. So, and you know, because Rob was very much like that too, I think he just didn't get along with the guy from the start and probably never honestly felt comfortable there. So.
Well, XPW was the complete opposite of where Michael came from.
Oh, I know that.
So, I don't know, though. The anti-hardcore gimmick, I think, would have gotten over.
It probably would have.
He was doing it in 97, and there was an infamous show in mid-97 up here in Hayward, California, and the main event was Vic Grimes, Vicious Vic, against Mike Modest. And what happened was they didn't film the show. It wasn't filmed at all, like every other show. This was not filmed. So since the show was not filmed, Modest decided to take a door off its hinges and gave Vic a T-bone suplex through it. And that was insane. And the reason I bring this show up is that, for one, it was a dark show where it wasn't filmed. And for two, Taro from Revolution Pro and Pro Wrestling Guerrilla made his debut on that show against Ultimo Dragoncito. Ron Rivera was at the show. Disco Machine was there. It was all these guys that went on, you know, on to fame and fortune and whatnot on independent pro wrestling that were at this show. And it's just amazing how all these guys come from nothing and then they move up in the world. So I mentioned Ron Rivera. Do you have any Ron Rivera stories, and have you ever made a TJ trip with Ron?
No, I have not made a TJ trip with Ron, but I know what that means, if you will.
Break it down.
And Ron's a great guy, you know. I even trained with him for a while. I used to train at Rev Pro when I was when I had finally recovered from my ACL repair. And because when I won the title, like a couple weeks after I won the title, I blew out my ACL training. So the whole time I had that belt, I had a bad knee. Just basically decided to just tape it up until Rob got the stupid belt off me. As soon as he got it off me, lost to Shane Douglas, went and got it fixed. So basically took a year off, started training again with Ron at AWS, the training facility that they had there, and, you know, was training with Chris Bosch and Super Dragon and who am I forgetting? Rising Sun. Man, I'm horrible at names. I drink too much.
How about Blitzkrieg?
But, you know, just pretty much the whole laundry list of your Rev Pro guys. Ronan. And the list goes on. But anyway.
So you came back from the injury, and you were working out at with Ron and whatnot. Did you take any shots with Rev Pro at all?
What do you mean?
Do you mean
did I work
shots?
Any stuff with them?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were doing shows at the AWS venue with doing shows with Bart and in City of Industry, and later they made a new brand, Revolution X, and it was it was more of a Rev Pro was pretty much 80% lucha, and Rev X was just kind of like soup of the day, a little hardcore, a little mat wrestling, just everything, you know. They were just more potluck type shows. So yeah, I did a lot of stuff there with them.
Well, you've mentioned AWS and Bart. What are your feelings of Bart, A, as the owner of one hell of a pro wrestling shop, B, as a promoter?
He's just a really cool guy who obviously loves the business, and the shows he puts on, you know, the people that he brings in and whatnot, you know, I mean, I'm sure he qualifies for a nonprofit status, you know. He's obviously just doing it for the love, you know, takes care of his guys, you know, usually pays better than most of the other guys, you know, out here, you know, just tries to recognize the guys that are willing to put forth the effort and you know, make his name look good for his shows, you know, for an AWS show, you know. So it's all mutual, and I think all those guys, you know, really love and respect him, you know. Just
yeah.
A really good guy. Just a good guy to have on the indie scene.
Well, it's the more companies that run, the better. The more dates, you know, the boys get to take, and, you know, more ring time, and, you know, that's the problem. You know, you have so many one-shot companies, and, you know, there just aren't enough, you know, for these guys to be working every weekend. And but I'll tell you, though, Bart runs, what, every 2 weeks, I think? Or I know at least once a month.
Yeah, I mean, he's somewhere within the 3 weeks to a month, you know, every 3 weeks or every month, every 3 or 4 weeks.
No, that's pretty cool. And also just the idea of a pro wrestling shop. Can't get any better than that, man.
Right.
You know, you just can't get any better than that.
Exactly.
Okay, let's go back to some results here. Well, here's a name that has come up with me in the last couple days. I know him as Bad Apple Joe Applebomber, also known as Pogo the Clown. What are your thoughts on Big Pogo?
He's just a really nice guy, you know, always very friendly. You know, pretty much like... I have the same experiences with him that I have with Vic Grimes, you know, just real nice guys, you know, always friendly, you know, fun, cool people to hang out with, and that all goes out the window when they get in the ring, because Joe or Pogo or whatever he's going by at the time, he will fuck you up, so.
He's a wee bit stiff, and he is a scary, scary guy. He is just very large and imposing, and, you know, still, whenever I see him, I'm just, you know, really just genuinely afraid of that guy, and it just spooks me out. But I do love the Pogo the Clown gimmick. It was based on, you know, John Wayne Gacy and that stuff. I'm kind of surprised that it wasn't explored more. What do you think of the Pogo the Clown gimmick?
Well, you know, it was just a it's just another example of, you know, the whole Rob Black experience. You know, I mean, the guy was the guy loved his sex and violence. You know, and the guy was really into the whole. You know, serial killer thing, you know, how some people just become fans of that type of stuff. And so I guess he just loved the notion, you know. Some people, big horror movie fans and, you know, that type. And Rob was definitely one of those, you know, people, you know. So, you know, I mean, we had fun with it.
It was a cool gimmick, though. It was a cool gimmick. I mean, I really loved it, but I don't think that they did enough. I don't think they did enough. I mean, you could have really done some creative TV. I don't want to bury the booking crew of XPW, but if you were to put that Pogo the Clown idea in the hands of Paul Heyman in, say, 96 or 97 at ECW, imagine what could have been done. But then I think it's more of, I don't want to say lack of creative. Jeez, I'm digging myself in a hole here. Okay, I'm all right. I'll say that.
You know what it really was? I mean,
I'm kind
of. I think a lot of guys that weren't, you know, that weren't given enough of a development, I guess is a good word for this.
Yeah.
You know, it was just basically, you know, it was a matter of availability, you know, because, I mean, we were down here, and he was, of course, up there, you know, so it's not like some of the rest of us where you could just call us up at 1 o'clock in the morning and just be like, hey, come down and shoot a promo. You know what I mean? So I think that's, for most guys, you know, what hindered them the most, which is why you did see a lot of, you know, Chaos and GQ Money and Supreme and, you know, the people who were more accessible. So
okay, all right. Well, that makes sense. So it's more of a logistic problem as opposed to a creative. Well, you mentioned it. You mentioned Chaos. What do you think of Chaos as a worker and then outside of the business?
I think that he's an excellent worker who should have a better he should give himself more credit. You know what I mean? He should. I would love for him to have a little more confidence than he does in pursuing bigger and better things, and. You know, he knows I feel that way, and you know, it's still not too late. You know, the sky's the limit for him. He just needs to you know, if he really wants it, you know, he just needs to push harder to make that happen, I think. You know, because the guy has plenty of talent, and you know, maybe he needs help you know, pursuing bookings and whatnot and getting more work and getting out there and, you know, going to Mexico, going to Japan, going to Germany, what have you, you know? To
I'm really surprised that he's not signed to a contract. He's been ready for a few years now. He's got the body, he's got the look, he's got a hell of a look. A hell of a look. I mean, there's not too many guys out there that have the look and type of style where the way that he presents himself that he has. And I think that he'd be able to completely skip the developmental stage and just go right up. I don't know if he's not trying to get in, he's not sending, you know, tapes or whatever, or he's just I don't know what it is, man, but, you know, he should be somewhere in the WWE fold.
But yeah, just, you know, that's how I feel, you know, because I mean, I've known him forever, you know, and we don't always get along. I mean, we are, you know, more like brothers than anything else. So so we've probably fought a lot, you know, on a bunch of different things. But like I said, he's like family to me, and like, you know, I'm always going to have his back, but we don't always see eye to eye, because I'll be the first one to, you know, to say that that I think he just doesn't push himself as hard as he should to you know, to get out there, to move up the ladder, because I think he can do it, you know.
Okay, how about any memories? The big man, Supreme.
The uncle of Chaos. Yes. He, you know. Let me see. I'm trying to remember what year it was, but like I wasn't even training yet. Okay. When I had seen these two guys, because, you know, I was always, you know, a rockabilly greaser guy, you know, and I used to go to these dirtbag bars and stuff, and I discovered Johnny Legend one day and his incredibly strange rock and roll wrestling shows that he put on down here in Hollywood. You know, and I was just starting to contemplate, you know, actually getting into this whole thing. And so I went to one of his shows, you know, and he had all these crazy bands playing. And then out comes this tag team called Supreme Chaos. You know, I mean, this was much, I guess it was pretty much my very first indie show that I went to was in this bar, you know, and this crazy show. And, you know, here comes these two guys, and it just blew me away, you know, that they were just so different from anything that I've ever seen on television, you know. I mean, I believe their match was against, if you remember, Christian Blood from the early XPW. At the time, he and Craze were doing kind of like a Public Enemy gimmick, and they were known as the Neighborhoods. So it was the Neighborhoods against Supreme Chaos, and I believe the stipulations of their match, I guess the prize for the match was they were wrestling over a six-pack of Tecate. So it was pretty crazy. I mean, there were bar tables pressed up against the ring, you know, your typical L.A. crowd. Didn't seem to faze them one bit that guys were flying out of the ring and literally landing on their table, like on their glasses and stuff, and there was, you know, glass on the floor, and, you know, Supreme's landing on you, Chaos is landing on you, you know, just totally wild, crazy shit. And so, you know, that's where I, that was my first experience of them, you know, and when we first started going out and recruiting guys, you know, and Rob was giving us his whole pitch, you know, and his whole vision, this is what I want, you know, my company to be like, you know. I was the first one to say, you know what, I know these guys that are perfect for you, and you're going to love them. And sure enough, you know, but, you know, because I didn't think at the time, though, that they would be interested in that whole concept of you know, being exclusive, you know, because the other two guys, the Neighborhoods, because I was also trying to get them in, too. And so those two had problems with it, but Supreme and Chaos, like right off the bat, they were like, no, this guy looks real committed, and it looks like he's willing to put money into it. And so they were one of the first guys on board, you know, and they were just like, fuck it, let's do it, you know. This is the place where we were meant to be, you know. And as it turns out, you know, that was correct, so.
Yep. Excuse me. Supreme ended up being the, you know, the flag bearer for XPW. He put the company on his back. As far as the hardcore stuff's concerned, he put it on his back. You know, he carried it, and I give him all the credit in the world. I give you the credit in the world for making the world title, you know, actually mean something. Okay. Looking through some results here. Wow. Here's a name that I haven't seen for a while. Steve Rosano. Any stories about Steve or memories?
You know, I just, when we found out that he was going to come in, you know, because of the whole thing with, Modest and Morgan, you know, it was, you know, the consensus was, oh, here we go again, another APW guy, you know, it's probably going to be problems again, or, you know. But no, Steve seemed to like, you know, he wasn't cut of that same cloth, you know. He wasn't too concerned about, you know, like, is this going to come off as something sleazy or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, he embraced it. That's kind of like the guy, you know, that's kind of like who he was as well. So he fit in great, you know, right off the bat, you know.
Yeah, I know Steve personally, and it wasn't a, when I heard that he came down to XPW, it didn't surprise me at all. I was like, yep, he'll fit in, no problem. He'll do okay. So, actually, I'm having Steve on the show on the 6th. So, he's making his return to a wrestling show on, I think it's the 10th, either the 9th or 10th, up here in Santa Clara. So, I'm going to go out and I'm going to see him. I haven't seen Steve in over 10 years. So,
Did I see correctly on there that you... that you also listed that you're having XPW historian Jonathan Barber on your show?
Yes.
Now, let me ask you this. How did he get such a prestigious title?
I gave it to him.
Oh, okay. Because I was thinking maybe he, like, you know,
no.
might have sent you some sort of literature where that was written on there.
No. That was all me. That was all me. I chose to put Mr. Barber over. So.
Okay, then.
There you go. Well, I'm going through results here, and it shows that XPW had the honor, and I say honor, to have working for them probably one of the greatest lucha tag teams ever, Mexico's Most Wanted, Damien and Halloween. What are your opinions on those two?
Really nice guys, really fun guys, you know, just always, you know, in a good mood, having a good time. I miss them right now, just you bringing their name up, you know. A lot of good times. Got along with everybody, you know. Never had any ego or anything, you know. Just always, here we are. Here to work, you know, have a good time. Just great guys, you know.
Yeah, they are great talents, and you know it's a shame that they're broken up. It really sucks that they're broken up because they were a really really good team.
Why are they broken up? See, I don't know.
One is in AAA, the other's in CMLL.
Oh.
So I think if I remember right, Halloween was fired from CMLL.
So it's like a Romeo and Juliet thing now?
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. Be nice if they could meet on vacation in California. But,
yes.
You know. Okay. Also, you know, I'm going through the results here, and I see some lucha influence. You know, we have Ruby Guerrero, we have Psicosis, Mexico's Most Wanted, Vampiro. I'm kind of surprised that they didn't use the luchadors more, you know, in a bigger type role as opposed to a special attraction. Do you think that if they were put higher on the card, it would have meant something more than what they were doing?
No, I just think that you know, they seem to be cool with what it was that they were doing with what they had, and then again, we're going back to the whole availability issues, you know, and so I think that was just pretty much it, you know. Like, we appreciated having them, and, you know, and they help legitimize things, you know, and help cast a spotlight on guys like Chaos and, you know, and myself and others, you know. So... But just all good, memories of all that, you know. Just very, very low drama issues from pretty much everybody that came in, you know. Except for maybe Nicole Bass. She was a bit needy.
What was up with him?
Well, Nicole Bass, her husband. See, I said her husband. I said her. You said him.
Well, whatever.
It was you. But her husband or boyfriend, I don't know what the hell he was, but he was kind of a handful in a pain in the ass sort of way. And she was too, you know. They were they weren't mean spirited or anything like that. They were just kind of nutty. They were just a little too nutty, you know. Like Cronus, you know. Cronus Cron's the nicest guy in the world, you know. But at the end of the night, you know, he's probably going to, before he gets in the shower, he's probably going to strip naked, and he's probably going to shake his body like a dog, and he's going to spray blood all over the walls. You know what I mean? Nice guy, though. But, you know, he's probably going to get you in a little bit of trouble with the venues. So, I'm just saying. Nicest guy in the world, too.
Yeah, I have to agree.
Loved working with that guy.
Vampiro. Now, I heard that Vamp was some trouble backstage politically. You don't have to go into anything, but a yes or a no answer would suffice.
In XPW?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about that.
Okay. Well, what are your opinions on Vamp in XPW, the work he did there, and have you seen any of his work outside of XPW?
Well, yeah, I mean, we also worked together in WSX. You know, I was managing the Trailer Park Boys there, and so we, you know, we got to, you know, hang out again. And, you know, he's just, you know, maybe there's guys that, you know, you have to put in this special category. There's guys, there's your Shane Douglas and your Conan and your Vampiro, you know, guys, you have to put them in a special category because, you know, they're your alpha male types, you know, they like to be in charge, you know, they like to, you know, they like to offer their opinion and all those things, you know, and maybe that's why people have static with them, you know what I mean? But, you know, they were all there to help. They were all there to, you know, to put the company over and everyone else, and, you know, they were all team players at the end of the day, but maybe because they were, you know, just kind of that whole born leader type of person, that maybe that's why they rubbed some people the wrong way. So that's my opinion of it. That's my psychoanalysis.
Okay, now I need to know, is Angel, the hardcore homo, a shoot homosexual?
I don't know.
Neither do
I. I really don't care either, you know?
It doesn't matter. Have you ever seen a bump machine like that kid?
Yes.
He's just like a human pinball.
Yeah, I've seen a guy like him named Homeless Jimmy.
There you go.
Just two guys that you know, even GQ Money, for that matter, you know, just guys who love the big spot, you know, who were supreme as well, you know, guys who were willing to just say fuck it and, you know, and live for that kind of shit, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of funny speaking about Jimmy because, like, some of my my memories, like, when New Jack came in, you know, first he's diving out of the balcony of the Olympic, and the first thing I hear the next day is how bummed out Jimmy is, you know, because now the bar has been raised, you know, like he was, like, as soon as that went down, he was foaming at the mouth to top. That's what kind of a nut that kid was, you know?
It's insane.
Yes.
That's just... But, you know, there's a spot on the card for that, and, you know, those guys, you know, it's not like he's going to go out and... Jimmy's not going to go out and give you a five-star classic. But he knows how to entertain people, you know, and he did a rather good job at it.
Well, I mean, you need to plug people in the right way, you know? I mean, when Jimmy was in Slammers with me, you know, he was Jesse James, or Jimmy James. He was just very scoop of vanilla type of persona, you know, just very vanilla ice cream. And then in a UIWA, I believe, he was a Skull Crusher, which was just a very, you know, looked like a character from Highlander, you know, just cutting really weird promos and stuff, and just like wasn't very believable, and like people just didn't like it, you know. So you know, I came up with the whole actually I stole the Jimmy gimmick from the commissioner of Extremely Strange Wrestling up there in Frisco that you guys used to have up there.
Paulie.
Yeah, yeah. So I said, well, why don't we make him a homeless guy, you know? So he can kind of go that same Sabu route, and he doesn't have to talk, you know, he can just mumble to himself and, you know, swat imaginary flies and whatnot, and we just you know, put it out there and saw if it worked, and he was just like, you know, just natural at it immediately, like he had been doing it his whole life. And then you know, we just came up with the concept to make him the super underdog and just, you know, never let him win and just getting beaten up, and he just loved the whole concept of, you know, just getting annihilated every time, you know. And, you know, when he finally got that first victory, you know, I mean, that was a payday, you know. I mean, that place erupted, you know. It was crazy.
Well, you mentioned ESW. Well, what are your feelings and opinions on J.R. Benson?
Nice guy, crazy guy, fun guy. He really loves his shit too, you know. He's definitely our you could consider him like our target audience, you know, a guy like J.R. Benson. You know? Probably stolen some women's shoes in his life. You know, probably has abandoned a car because it had a boot on it or something, or, you know. Probably loves metal and porno and horror movies and, you know, just being a scumbag.
Scumbag. Well, you know, that's pretty close.
See, some people take that as a, you know, as a slur or whatever. But, you know, I mean, this is coming from a guy who calls himself White Trash Johnny Webb, you know. I think it's better to look at things like that as like a badge of honor, you know. Like, if, you know, if you really love the shit, you know, it's okay to say I'm an XPW fan, you know, or I'm White Trash, or I'm a dirtbag. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing.
Being honest, nothing. Now we have well, I'll just say the name, Vinny Massaro. What do you think of good old Vincenzo?
You know, I don't know why, but when he was here with us, like, I really didn't have that much interaction with him at all, you know? I mean, I think maybe we just, you know, said hello and goodbye to each other a couple of times here and there, but I couldn't really tell you that much more, you know? I just really never got any opportunity to, you know, even have a drink or a bite of food with the guy. But, you know, I'd seen his stuff before, and I saw what he was doing, you know, obviously on our shows, you know, and, you know, great worker and stuff. And now I guess he's going to be on Howard Stern or something on Thursday?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool that, you know, he gets to be on Howard Stern. I'm not quite sure why. I didn't read the MySpace bulletin. I'm pretty
the the whole gimmick is Howard's having on ugly dudes with hot girlfriends.
There you go.
So,
well, he's definitely an ugly dude. So, yeah, I was there for Vinny's debut match in '97 when he came out as Little Dick Grimes. He was Vic Grimes' younger brother, and they were a really good team. And it's amazing why Vinny has not, you know, moved on and advanced to the next level, much like Chaos. Vinny has the tools He has the psychology. Hell, he's a great trainer, too. He trains at a company out here. I don't understand why he's not, you know, stepping up to the next level. He's really good talent.
Yeah, you know, I mean, with a lot of guys, it seems like you either have to be, you know, a really good salesman, and you have to be willing to, you know, to just make that a full-time job of going out there and, you know, looking for promoters to use you and getting your name out there and, you know, talking to whoever you have to get dark matches and stuff like that. And, you know, there's a lot of work involved in that. You either, you know, need a little bit of help from connected people to get your foot in the door in certain places, or you need to put a lot of time into it. And, you know, I think there's just a lot of guys, you know, they have normal issues in the normal world, and, you know, bills got to get paid and got to have a job. As Tracy Smothers says, I need to get a day job to support my wrestling habit. So, you know, I think that's what it boils down to, you know. It's the things in the normal world that sort of trap you into holding on to that day job, or you know, or you have family issues or whatever, you know, or you don't like the idea of living out of a suitcase, you know. I think there's things like that that holds talented guys back.
Do you have any Chris Candido stories?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Please
yeah,
share.
Chris and Tammy, you know, when they first came in, and I guess they came in at the same time with Axel Rotten, and that was interesting because Axel, when he came in, his first match was with Supreme, and I guess there was, I mean, I'm just giving bits and pieces of the story because I didn't hear it exactly myself. It's all, like, kind of secondhand. But I guess just to ensure that that no indie guy that he didn't know wasn't going to stiff him or whatever, he made sure to let Supreme know that he kept a knife in his boots. So you know, it was just kind of like a pre-warning, you know, like don't try to stiff me, you know, don't try to get out of hand with me, you know, at my expense or whatever. Maybe Supreme had already made that bad of a rep for himself. I don't know, but anyway, Chris and Tammy, yeah, they came in and, you know, just really nice people, you know, who didn't at all act like, you know, we're here because of, because we fucked up or whatever, you know, we had it, you know, things that you would expect, you know, a sort of attitude that just wasn't there, you know, they were just, you know, genuinely pleased to be there and helpful and, you know, with insight and just made everything better, you know, and just helped to make things legit, you know, helped to push guys like Messiah and myself and Damien Steele and, you know, just good experiences.
Johnny, would you like to take a listener call?
Sure, why not?
Cool. Alrighty, I have another caller from the 818 on the line. Caller, whom am I speaking with? Caller, welcome to Rubber Guard Radio. Whom am I speaking with? Excuse me?
Hello.
Okay. Caller? Okay, we got a bad connection. All right, so, caller, if you are listening, please call back in. We will take your call again. Okay.
Maybe.
We're talking.
We'll think about it.
There you go.
Did you drop the ball?
That's right. Well, I hit the answer button, and no one responded.
You got to hit the hole running, as they say.
There you go. There you go. Well, now, were you as one of the boys, were you entertained by watching Candido work? Because he would do things for the fans. He would do things for the referee. He would do things to entertain the boys in the back. Did you ever stick your head out of the curtain and just watch him?
Well, like I said, I was editing the show, so I probably have studied more of all of these guys than anyone else. So, yeah, I mean, I appreciated all of his antics, if that's what you're asking.
He was a brilliant worker.
Yeah.
I don't think there was, as far as pure talent in the ring, I don't think there was ever a better in-ring worker than Candido. And he was so well-rounded, he could do everything. And, you know, and that's just a fucked-up story. It just is.
And you know, it's funny because even though he had the looks, right, to be like you're just ultra baby face, you know, like I never liked him like that. I mean, he was just a great, you know, heel. Just I mean in like the little cowardly little shit way type of a heel. You know what I mean?
The Smoky Mountain character, I think, was my favorite. Where he was the big crybaby, and after
exactly.
He'd lose, he'd go down and kick the mat and do the crying and shit. And
exactly.
Then they did the program with him and Tim Horner where he went around the horn wearing the diaper.
Right.
I mean, hello, that's
right.
Money.
Right.
You know, that's good shit right there.
Yeah.
You know, 94 Smoky Mountain or 93 Smoky Mountain, that's good stuff.
I still steal that shit to this day, especially when I work lucha shows, because it seems like those are the only crowds that really appreciate that anymore, you know, to just be the gringo heel that comes in and talks all this crap and, you know, and then at the end of the day is, you know, ran out on a rail, you know, crying and covered in, as I said earlier, covered in dirt and tortillas, you know, and it's just great to work that way, you know. Sometimes, just for fun.
So, what companies are you currently working for?
You mean wrestling?
Yes, sir.
Right now, I'm doing stuff with Epic War, whatever else name he's adding on to the end of that. It used to be Epic, and then it used to be War, and then now it's Pro Wrestling Epic War.
For now, it's Gary Ask promotion. So
yeah, Gary. Yeah,
for Gary. And
Scarhead.
Scarhead.
Lobotomy boy.
That's horrible. I'm not going to go on my Gary Yap rant. We'll leave that alone. Let's just say that it's a good thing that he's about 500 miles away from me. But
all right. if you want to drop that one, I got tons of dirt on that. I got dirt on everybody though. I know where all the bodies are buried.
tremendous. So you worked with on the same show as my partner Alex Saint. You care to talk about the match that you worked at that show? Who was it with and how'd it go?
It was me and a couple other Mexican fellers who choose to take the stance that the illegal aliens in this state should be sent home because they don't have their papers and whatnot, and we were up against I believe it was Karateka and Hurricane Ramirez Jr. and Super Mojado, the champion of all the SoCal illegals, I guess, is what he's billing himself as.
Jeez. Horrible.
Super Mojado.
So
that's super
are
wet bag.
Jeez. So much for being politically correct. But that's okay. We don't give a fuck here on Rubber Guard. So, Do you plan on picking up more of a regular schedule, or just working when you feel like it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm not really looking for bookings. You know, I just take what falls into my lap. You know, I've been you know, back at it on a regular basis for the past 8 months or so. Just really just mostly gearing up for this show that's coming up on the 24th. So just making sure all the rust is off.
Okay.
The knee's good, and getting in the gym. And
I met you at the March New Wave Pro Wrestling Show in San Diego.
Yes.
And I must say you were looking very, very good and fit. Now, well, we're going to talk about that show. What match on that show stood out to you? Because there were a couple barn burners there. So
I don't know so much about matches. They were just like moments, you know. I mean, obviously, people were talking about your boy, Alex Saint, and shoving that Nurse Nancy like a good 50 feet into the crowd or whatever. That looked ugly. Fans sure didn't appreciate that. I loved it.
Oh, I did too. That was great.
The Aerial Star and Scott Lost, that was a good match.
Yeah, that was good stuff. I filmed that match too, so there's alternate camera shots and whatever, and I happened to be filming by the side of the entrance there, and towards the beginning of the match, Aerial Star nails Scott with a dive, and it was just no hand, somersault planche. It was just sweet and clean. And you know, it didn't matter that Aerial Star lost the match. He kept up with Scott. You know, Scott made Aerial Star, you know, made him a star that night. And for me, that was the match of the night. That was fun. That was just good stuff. And
well,
and
I mean, you know, it was a good match, but I actually thought that the TJ and LTP and Chimera match was better.
Really? Even though it ended early?
Yeah, but what are you gonna do? But it was good.
It
you
was,
know, when you go when you go to a French restaurant, they don't give you like a big bowl of stuff. They only fill up the tiny little bit of the plate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they give you kind of a half-ass portion, so that you'll appreciate it more. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but they were just getting going, and the referee had to fuck it up there, and you know that. Just let's not.
That happens, but I mean, if you can appreciate, you know, if you can appreciate what you got, then it was good for what you got.
I have to agree.
I mean, I hear what you're saying. It could have been a whole lot better, but it was pretty good for what it was.
Well, I'm being rough on it because when I first saw the card on paper, I picked that one as the match of the night. That was my pick for match of the night.
Right.
That one was going to be it, just because the Chimera is awesome. I love Chimera. LTP, you can't say enough good stuff about that guy. Hell, he works for 01. And then there's T.J. Perkins, who's been, you know, pretty much all over. You know, I mean, how can you not have a good match with those three guys in the ring?
Right.
Now, what was your opinion on Anchors Away as a tag team?
Let me ask you something. How long have those guys been a team together anyway?
You know what? That's a really good question. I'm not sure.
But, I mean, has it been, like, more than, like, a couple of years? Or less?
Maybe close to 2 years?
Yeah.
I think.
I mean, that really impressed me because, I mean, they just work really good together. And what they do... I mean, they just have it down, you know, and it's just the perfect thing for that location, you know, San Diego, obviously, and you know, like you see a lot of San Diego, SoCal feds, you know, especially like on the Lucha shows, where you know someone's always working that angle where you know. We're the evil INS guys, or we're, you know, the Border Patrol guys, or we're cops, you know. you know, coming to roust all the illegal luchadors, you know. And it's just kind of a nice spin because, I mean, I went to high school in San Diego. So I really appreciate, you know, all that shit for what it is, you know, because I know what it is that they're trying to convey, you know, here's these rowdy sailors who come into town, you know, who are like always getting into shit, you know, and they're just, you know, they're just always looking for trouble, or they just always attracting trouble, you know, and I'm just really impressed with their whole presentation.
It was amazing. They had a really good tag match, and they took maybe all of 3 bumps.
Right.
And they didn't have to.
Right.
They did all their comedy and their shtick. I'm not going to get into that stuff because you need to go out of your way to see Anchors Away. Somehow you can get footage of them at WrestleWarehouse.com.
Right.
Plug for my sponsor. But you need to go out of your way and see these guys. It's just insane. I mean, they took all of 3 bumps, and it was just some of the craziest stuff. I've never seen them live. I've seen them, you know, on DVD before, and you know, and I was at the show as a guest, and I saw them, and I was just shocked. You know, these guys, they did nothing. They did
right.
nothing. You know, one of them was working hurt with a very bad knee.
Right.
And you couldn't tell. It was
right.
it was just fun stuff. So what do you think of San Diego? You know, you made the appearance at that New Wave show. What if you were to get, would you take a booking down there?
Yeah, I would, but now I'm going to make a comment that will probably fuck that up. But that's just how I am. You know, I like
be
to
honest,
just, you know,
ahead.
Just give an honest opinion, you know, and the way I saw it, man, because I know there's a lot of the guys down there, you know, that they're, you know, maybe they're still in their rookie year or whatever, you know, and I'm not putting them down or nothing like that. I'm just, all I'm saying is they are spoiled. They are so spoiled to have such great turnouts with fans that are just like, I mean, those are like some of the best fans I've ever seen. They're you know, they're happy with a good arm drag. You know what I mean? And they're just loud and rowdy and into it the whole time, and just a really great fan base. You know, and that's like a veteran guy. You know, that's like a dream. You know, to go work shows like that all the time, instead of, you know, like sometimes you'll go, you know, out in you know, the somewhere lost between Fresno and Bumfuck, you know, and maybe like 20 people show up, and you know, you give it the same effort, you know, and for practically no one, you know, but to be spoiled like that as you know, like a greenie, you know, as a rookie, you know, with crowds like that, I mean, they're just like they're just so spoiled. It's crazy. But yeah, I'm definitely envious of the kind of fans that they have down there, and I'd love to work down there. So if anyone wants to give me a call, I'll be there.
Well, that shouldn't be an issue. You'll be contacted after the show. That's a given. I would personally like to see you working more in the San Diego scene. There's some really good hidden talents down there. They don't get enough love because of Gorilla up there in L.A. You know, SoCal, there's more to SoCal than just Gorilla.
Right, but Gorilla came from Rev Pro, and Rev Pro came from, you know, let's go work on a SCCW show, and let's go work on this, and let's just go work with other people who are more knowledgeable and better than ourselves, and let's better ourselves through them and learn from them, their experience, and, you know, and then ultimately that's what they became, you know what I mean? So it's the same thing for those guys down there, you know. If if they got veteran guys coming in there, if they're always looking for bigger and better talent, you know, to come, you know, to work with and learn from and whatnot, then they're going to get better too. You know, this is just the beginning of their story down there. You know, I mean, they can have that for themselves too, one day. You know.
Well, yeah, they're rebuilding down there.
Right. I mean, it's in infancy stages right now. You know what I mean? But I mean, they could have the same fortune as PWG in a couple of years. You know, you never know.
Hopefully, you know, if you know the chips fall the right way, I think that they're on the road there. They did the right thing in that March show by bringing in Scott to work with Ariel Starr. From time to time, you bring in, you know, a larger name. You know, I mean, he doesn't even have to put the other guy over.
Right.
You know, Ariel Starr lost that match.
Right.
But I don't remember that.
Right.
I remember, you know, them going a solid, you know, 14 minutes, and it was good stuff.
Most people don't, you know what I mean? But, I mean, that's what it's all about. You know, it's not even just about being able to put on paper that so-and-so worked with Sabu or Vampiro or Shane Douglas or Terry Funk, or you know, it's not about that. It's about that guy actually working with those people and learning from those people and becoming a better wrestler, and then, you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Eventually, you know, returning the favor to some other little turd who's trying to get into the business. You know, it's the circle of life.
Exactly, the circle of life.
Exactly.
Exactly what it is. Now, as far as other guys that were on that New Wave show that you saw, anybody else catch your eye?
Yeah, probably, but like I'm just not good with the names, you know.
Was he
maybe if I had maybe if I had pictures with names under it at my disposal, I could probably.
Did you have a mask?
Didn't a lot of guys have masks? I don't know.
Were you there for the main event? Did you stay for the whole Battle Royal?
Yeah, I was there for the whole thing, yep.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, SoCal Crazy was number two, and he went all the way to the end.
Right.
That guy's a stud. He's
yeah.
a stud.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's kind of like the franchise guy down there.
Yeah, he had a match with Adam Pearce this past Saturday where... for the SoCal Pro Wrestling 1-year anniversary show, and they tore the house down. I mean, it was just, I take that back. Yeah, it was him and Pierce. That was just good stuff. I'm trying to get SoCal Crazy up here. He's just such a good talent, and he can work with anybody.
Yes.
Actually, I would like to see you and him go. I think that would be a pretty interesting match.
That would be fun.
Hmm.
I am definitely trying to work more lucha here and there, you know.
Yeah, there's a lucha company that runs every 2 weeks down in San Diego, Oceanside, ran by Oscar. I forget his last name, but it's LLII, and they do rather well, and they tend to use indie guys as well. So that might be, you know, something, you know, you might be able to, you know, hook up a shot with him,
right?
You know, here or there. So I'll what I'll do is I'll shoot you some information about Oscar's promotion. They bring in from time to time a bigger name to headline, and you know they run rather good shows. But well, you mentioned lucha. Have you ever been to Mexico to work?
No, not to work. I had a hard enough time dealing with the instances here that I don't think my Espanol is up for that level of a challenge. You know, I would have to be working with a guy that was pretty good with the English. You know, okay. I think
because
just my experiences here with. With some guys, you know, it's kind of rough. I mean, I, I, I speak a bit of Spanish, but it's not very good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Which is it's kind of funny because one of my favorite matches that I ever had was with Nosawa, and the bad amount of Spanish that I knew was just enough for us to get the job done, because I don't speak Japanese and he doesn't speak very good English, but we both speak shitty Spanish. So we just managed, you know, to have a really fun time with with the limited skills that we had there to communicate.
That's a guy that I really love watching. I love Nosawa. I just can't wait each week for my All Japan DVDs to come in. I love that guy's work. He is so fun to watch. He's just a nut. You know, he's just a nut. I'd love to, you know, sit back for a couple hours and, you know, partake with that gentleman and, you know, have a couple beers and whatever. And he just is he that mellow backstage as well?
Yeah, he's just kind of a crazy, nutty, happy guy, you know. Kind of pretty much what you see is what you get, you know.
I dig that.
When I saw him work, and then when I got to know him, I was, you know, I was pretty convinced that, yeah, you know, it's pretty much he pretty much is who I thought he was.
And he's one guy that I would hope would take, you know, a 1 year excursion and just, you know, come here and stay here for a year, you know, go on tour with the clowns and whatnot, and, you know, work shots in between, and, you know, just because I would love to see him. I'd love to see him live. I mean, I've seen it, you know, I've seen DVDs of him, you know, working for Gorilla and XPW and I think AWS too. I think, yeah, I have a match with him and Damien in a no DQ from AWS, and they just go all over the place.
Right.
And,
yeah, and he worked for Epic also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he did shows out here for them too.
Yeah, man, that guy is just so talented. And you know, the thing is, he's well rounded too. He can do the stronger style. He can do the lucha. You know, he can do the fast paced Japanese junior stuff. So he's not pigeonholed. You know, he's able to do different stuff, and you know, that's what my problem with newer guys now. They get trained and they're one style. Oh, I'm just a submission guy. Oh, I'm just a striker. You know, you don't have guys that are learning different types of styles, and I preach that to my friends that are, you know, in the business or breaking in, that they need to train differently, learn different styles, work with different types of people, so that you are, I don't want to say marketable, but you're more likely to get booked above other people.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I do. I mean, and that's not for anyone's benefit other than my own, you know. I mean, but
yeah.
You know, I walk it like I talk it, you know. I you know, I'm humble. I go to, you know, train in other people's schools, you know, still, you know. I don't think I know it all. I'm always looking to learn. I've went and trained lucha and hardcore and mat wrestling and some MMA, and I have a martial arts background, you know, and I wrestled in high school, you know, and I throw it all in there, you know what I mean? And I tell all these kids now, you know, it's like, if you're going to go to school, that's great, you know, but just don't grow roots there, you know. You know, learn what you can, and when you think you've learned all they have to offer there, you know, go train somewhere else, you know. Go work with a whole other set of guys, you know. Learn about the business,
you
know.
Wherever you go, you'll learn something different.
Right, because if you learn that lucha style, then you can then it makes it easier for you to go consider getting bookings in TJ or whatever, you know, or
yeah, exactly.
Work in Japan, you know, same thing.
Exactamundo. Well, John, I got about 5 minutes left. Wow, I only planned on having you on for an hour, but we got you for almost two.
That's right.
That was tremendous, brother. Thank you for your time.
I am a bottomless well of information and knowledge and happy times.
I do have one more question. What is the next wrestling release from Big Vision?
It's funny you say that because I'm wrapping it up right now. It's going to be the Hardy Boys. Basically, it's the history of Omega Wrestling.
Yes.
So you're going to learn all about Champagne, first name Sham, last name Payne. You learn about the Serial Thrillers, tag team with Shane Helms. You're going to learn about Will-O-Wisp. You're going to learn about Surge. You're going to learn about Jason Arndt, who was Venom there. He was part of the Mean Street Posse later on. That's a crazy thing. I mean, that is like the high standard for all indie feds because there were 12 guys that came out of there that got, WWE, WCW, whatever contracts, all out of one indie fed in the backwoods of the Carolinas.
Yeah,
fascinating shit.
97, 98, man. Oh, my God. That was the good shit. Wow. All right.
So that'll be available in August, I believe.
August at Fine Retailers.
Yes.
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to wrap it up. How would fans be able to contact you or promoters that would like to book you? How can they contact you?
Just find me on MySpace, I guess. That's the way I get most of that that kind of stuff done. MySpace.com/XPWSX_WTJW.
Awesome. All right, brother, thank you for your time. I really appreciate you coming on. Good luck on the 24th. Hopefully you guys draw well and, we're not going to...
Well, it's practically sold out now, so...
Well, there you go, and hopefully the DVD sales will be pretty high so you guys can run another show.
Yeah, if you haven't got your tickets yet, whatever's left, might want to grab them. We have a ton of surprises on that show.
Tremendous. Well, once again, John, thanks for your time, brother. It was my pleasure. It was fun. Good luck on the show, and keep up the good work with Big Vision, brother. I, for one, appreciate your work.
Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you, Johnny.
All right, take care.
All right, brother. Okay, that was XPW Superstar White Trash Johnny Webb. Wow, we went almost 2 hours with Mr. Webb. That's insane. I only planned on going an hour, and then I was going to open the phone lines, but I guess we didn't have to. We had Mr. Webb. Wow, that's a little news there for you. The next Big Vision Entertainment release would be The History of Omega, which is the Hardys out there in Carolina. You need to go out of your way to get this. This is fun shit. 97, 98 was the year for that stuff. Good stuff. We're coming down to a minute. Yes, the next five shows will be XPW-based shows, spotlight shows. Coming up on Thursday, we will have... Okay, let me get the calendar here. Excuse me. Coming up Thursday, we will have... In the first hour, we'll have the Hardcore Homo Angel, and in the second hour, we'll be having GQ Money of XPW fame. This show is brought to you by our sponsor, WrestleWarehouse.com, for all your Lucha Libre, pro wrestling, masks, all kinds of different shit. Tell Jeff from Wrestle Warehouse that KZ from Rebel Guard Radio sent you. Also, our other sponsor would be FogCityWrestling.com. If you're anywhere in the Northern California, hell, Southern California, Nevada, whatever, there will be on Cinco de Mayo a DVD release party for the Fog City's first show. You can get info on that. FogCityWrestling.com. And their upcoming show, July 5th, Kezar Auditorium, San Francisco. Once again, FogCityWrestling.com. That's it for the sponsors. If you'd like to contact me, myspace.com/rubberguardradio. Also, check out our site, rubberguardradio.com. That should do it. And I'll talk to you kids on Thursday.
Blog Talk Radio.